Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna. It's an off-season episode. We've got a kick time for Notre Dame season opener. We've got some potential grad transfers to talk about. If you're on theathletic.com, you've probably been following the State of the Program series. Notre Dame's coming up in mid-June, but we've got some very interesting Notre Dame opponents coming up in the next couple weeks. And then just to get people excited, we'll talk a little Tyler Buchner as well. But Matt, kickoff times are a popular Twitter topic, also very impactful for recording of the Shamrock. But now we know what we were assured was going to happen anyway, that our first post-game reaction podcast will be recorded probably at 2:30 a.m. from a Courtyard by Marriott in Tallahassee after Notre Dame's primetime opener at Florida State. I guess I wouldn't even ask what your reaction to it, other than just like, it was good to see ESPN put out a graphic and you're seeing Alabama, Miami, Clemson, Georgia, Notre Dame, Florida State. It just felt like, oh yeah, college football is coming back, and that is freaking awesome.
Yeah, the Courtyard sounds like an upgrade from the Microtel a bunch of you were stuck at last time you went down to Tallahassee. It'll be Labor Day morning, up bright and early, 2 a.m. or so. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's we're a little more than 100 days out by my math, and no surprise, right? Especially Notre Dame. They haven't announced all of them yet, but I think we can do at least a better job of guessing what time every Notre Dame game will kick off this year than we did guessing where all their former players will get drafted, which is saying a lot. But it's exciting because you get that email in the middle of May kind of out of the blue because you're not really – it's not on your radar yet. And you're like, oh, wow. Like, it's even more exciting because last year was just – you didn't know what the hell was going on at this time of the year. And now you see those graphics. You see Miami versus Alabama, Ole Miss versus Louisville. A week later, you've got Michigan hosting Washington in primetime and Penn State hosting Auburn in primetime a week after that. It's cool. It's exciting. It gets you thinking about what college game day is going to look like in a real environment with students that opening weekend and campus to campus week to week. So no surprise that Notre Dame's game is in primetime. I mean, you only move a game to Sunday to give it that prime television window. I think I wouldn't say we have a good idea of how it will play out, but we have a good idea of how it will end, just given how far away Florida State is from being the Florida State that Notre Dame came to know last time they were down there in 2014. But it's exciting. It definitely puts your body clock kind of out of that spring, post-spring ball malaise and gets you more excited toward the summer and to camp, which is in August.
Yeah, there are some games, Georgia, Clemson, I've been looking forward to, but for some reason, I spaced that it was Labor Day weekend.
Me too. That was another one I forgot to mention.
I was like, wait, I thought it was like week two or week three. So I will I'll look forward to watching that probably from said Courtyard by Marriott in Tallahassee on Saturday, if I'm not covering another game of a former Shamrock guest on that Saturday. But,
That's a tease. That's got my mind wandering now.
And then, you even got North Carolina, Virginia Tech. I don't know if that one's on Friday night of Labor Day weekend as well. It's, two Notre Dame opponents. That will be interesting. It's, I sort of forgot how much interest there is in opening weekend in college football just because, last year was so weird, like you said. I mean, everything felt like, are we really doing this?
The Big Ten and Pac-12 weren't playing
them. Yeah, it felt awkward. I usually enjoy this, but I don't know if I should. This year is just going to be all-out tailgating. I think I saw a tweet today that Vegas is reopening in the next few weeks.
They closed?
Yeah, apparently. They're going back to full capacity. So college football should go the way Vegas goes. And while Notre Dame has not announced,
they are. They just Pac-12 just hired the president of MGM.
Good point. Notre Dame has not announced capacity for the stadium, but they announced digital ticketing. I mean, it's certainly, I get the vibe that they'll follow. You know, Virginia Tech came out 100% of capacity. It feels like that's sort of where everyone's going to get to eventually.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it's anything less than that, at least in week one. And the other part, to your point about how refreshing it was, non-conference games. Like, that really wasn't a thing last year, unless you were playing USF or some Group of Five team that was getting paid to get its brains beaten in. It's exciting. I mean, I think we know how Alabama versus Miami is going to go, but like when you see those two helmets together on that ESPN graphic, it's like, oh, yeah, these two teams have won a lot of national titles. One of them a lot longer ago than the other, but like it's two historic blue bloods and brands getting together. That's what we love. The Chick-fil-A kickoff game in Atlanta. The Clemson game's actually called the Duke's Mayo Classic in Charlotte, which is one more like twisting of the knife to Notre Dame and Wake Forest since they didn't get to do that last year. No offense to Notre Dame and Wake Forest fans. I think Clemson, Georgia's slightly better game than those two on a national scale.
Yeah.
Based on what we know about those two programs going into the season. But no, definitely I'm excited. I mean, it reminds you of some other games that you forgot were scheduled. Texas at Arkansas. Sneaky good game with the new coach at Texas and with Arkansas looking promising last year. I found it interesting, and this shows you like the Notre Dame brand, not that we ever doubted it. Like October 9th, number 15 Notre Dame at Virginia Tech was announced in that release with a TBD date and network. Like, okay, like TBD, like these two teams are playing on that day. So will it be primetime or will it not? Even Virginia Tech was tweeting out like, it's going to be a big game. And it's like, yeah, we know that. When's it going to be? There's a chance six of their Notre Dame's 12 games end up in primetime. I don't know if I'm going to forecast it being that many. Right now they have three, right? Florida State and then USC and North Carolina at home back-to-back.
Correct.
Both going to be at 7:30.
Virginia Tech, like you said.
Oh, Virginia Tech, so that's four.
Somebody made an interesting point. It sort of comes down to like the TV draft for that game. Does Fox try to get it and put it as like a big noon game? You know, do the big noon kickoff from Soldier Field? I don't know what the rules are of that. You know, certainly that would, because you look at the schedule of games that week.
I forgot that was a road. That was the Lambeau.
It's not an NBC game, so it's, you know, could be Fox, could be ABC, ESPN. The schedule of games that week, there's nothing of significance. It's really kind of that weird off week before everyone jumps into conference play, like full on, no looking back. So that could be a game day game, could be a big noon kickoff game. That will be a very coveted property because it, you know, whether it's at noon or whether it's at 7:30 p.m., that's going to be sort of that's going to be the marquee game of that weekend. So, you know, Virginia Tech, Wisconsin, you know, technically I always include whether it's at Stanford, at USC, if it kicks off at 4:30 local PM Pacific, that's a night game.
It is. I don't know. That's the wild card. I'll say five because I think, you know, the season gets weird and not everything plays out the way we think it will. Stanford has just been, went from maybe the most consistent to now maybe the most inconsistent, at least among like the decent programs every year. Like I have no idea how that team's going to be, especially in the last game of the year in 2021.
Yeah, it's interesting because before we hopped on, I was just sort of going over state of the program. You know, Notre Dame, my Notre Dame story at state of the program runs on June 14th. But, you know, I was going through, okay, USC runs on June 1st, Virginia May 31st, Wisconsin May 26th. Cincinnati has already run. Justin Williams did a nice job, I think, giving you a good inside look about where Cincinnati could pose a problem for Notre Dame, but ultimately maybe where, you know, the Group of Five versus Power Five really stands out most. But I didn't even think to look to see where Stanford was. Imagine this 5 years ago. I mean, Stanford was a legit marquee game. And now it's a little bit closer to like Virginia in terms of the prestige of this, which is unfortunate because it was such an awesome series for about a decade. But the way Stanford is trending, they lost a ton off last year's team. They just sort of may be mired in 7-5ville or 8-4 for quite a while.
Yeah, I feel like you're never out of it in the Pac-12 because outside of Oregon, none of those other 11 teams are really clicking at their peak, so to speak.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean, especially when you look back at like when Notre Dame arrived under Brian Kelly, for me, it will always be that Stanford game in 2012. Obviously, the elements and the drama at the end and the controversy added to it, but it was the box score, which was like they beat the crap out of Stanford in the trenches after Stanford outran them by 300-something yards or so
yeah.
the previous 2 years. That was always... That was the standard, right? It's like Notre Dame can be good again because, look, there's another school out west doing it very similar to them. And even when Notre Dame was good, like after that 2012 season, but like in 2013 and 14, they beat them. 15, they lose. You know, they may or may not have been eliminated in the playoff by Stanford on a 30-second drive to close out that 10-2 2015 regular season. They were just so like-minded in their approach, and when Stanford had won whatever it was, 4 of the first 6, I think, against Brian Kelly, it was like, well, Stanford can do it, you can do it. And now it's just, you know, like you said, Stanford got him in 2017 after a really bad third quarter from Brandon Wimbush, and it's just kind of been like unrecognizable under David Shaw, at least from what we came to know them in the 3 years since.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think people forget Notre Dame was winning that game in 2017 at the start of the fourth quarter, and then Wimbush sort of imploded.
Fourth quarter, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it. You know, and they kicked the crap out of him in 2018, which was, I think, kind of eye opening as it was happening. But that's, I think, the worm had turned at that point, and I have a hard time seeing it going back.
I do too. I mean, I'm lying to you if I say I'm intimately familiar with all of Stanford's personnel, but they just have not been the same. And 2019 was eye-opening too because Stanford jumps up to a pretty big lead there. And as we learn after the fact, like things weren't exactly harmonious in the Goog at the end of the year. And, you know, despite all that, Notre Dame just kind of flipped a switch and just ran them off the field in the second half, and it was never really in doubt. So and I think Notre Dame fans were kind of rushing the field or hanging out on the field afterward. It was kind just of a weird scene. Like
it was a mosey. It was kind of a mosey. It was really one of the weirdest post games that I've ever seen. Just didn't make any sense. Like, man, let's just hang out. Nobody else has got going anything on. It's Thanksgiving weekend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Notre Dame schedule is interesting. I've already been sucked into debates with fans about like kind of the show me the loss. Could Cincinnati really be that good?
I agree. Just show me the loss is just like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. And yet, it definitely sets up as a schedule. Whereas I feel like Notre Dame, to me, looks like a 10-2 type of team. However, as I go through the 12 games, it feels like a schedule where I'm going to pick Notre Dame to win every singular game that they play. knowing full well that at some point I will be wrong. But it's just, I have no idea what, when that game will be.
I agree completely. I mean, I look at that and think they'll, outside of maybe Wisconsin, they're going to be favored in every other game. And when they're favored in games, they win games. That's who they've been. That's been their identity the last 3 years or so under Brian Kelly. I think that also requires them to be playing, if not at their best, then at their cleanest every single week. And I think that's a lot easier to ask of a program with a second and a third year captain at quarterback than it is with a newcomer who, as experienced as he is still playing his first year of college football with this group of players, not all of whom, outside of the backfield and a few offensive linemen and tight ends, like, that's still far from a complete picture on offense. We still don't know who's going to be really catching balls for this group outside of Michael Mayer. So, yeah, I can't, like, fully commit and say, hey, they're going to run the table or go 11-1, but, like, I also can't circle a loss on there. I mean, I think we all have buyer's remorse on the North Carolina hype after last year, and while I think they'll be good again this year, like, I'm not ready to say, hey, this is the year the Tar Heels knock off Notre Dame.
I was just curious if you still regretted picking Clemson to win on November 7th, or you've gotten over that.
I will get over the one regular season loss of the Dabo Swinney era in the last 3 years. So I think Clemson turned out okay last year, at least yes. in the ACC picture.
Yeah, I believe that wrong. We both correctly nailed the second Clemson game.
I thought it was going to be a close game, but what do I know?
Yeah,
I mean, Clemson did not get an hour-long special featuring Pete Sampson
no,
on the ACC Network.
No, it really would have been poorly watched if they did. I don't think a lot of Clemson fans would have known who the hell I was or why I was on there. So probably for the best.
I think there was probably a watch party of the Notre Dame series among the Clemson coaches, with Dabo Swinney being the most popular he's ever been as an ACC head coach for stopping Notre Dame during their one-year rental period from winning the ACC.
That's true. Yeah, that may have been he may have peaked in ACC coach's popularity at that point. You know, as we look ahead to Notre Dame's season, I think there are a ton of unsettled storylines coming out of spring practice. A couple that I think would be fun to talk about today. What does Notre Dame do with Tyler Buchner? And also, what do they get out of the grad transfer market? You know, Buchner is more interesting, so we'll save that to second. Grad transfer could be significant, especially what happened with Nick McLeod last year at corner, what happened with Ben Skoranek at receiver. It's hard for me to imagine Notre Dame going 10-0 in the regular season without both of those guys. You could have a discussion about who was more important, but this week, the offer that I think is worth discussing because it's more rock solid is Tulsa cornerback Caleb Evans. Started games in each of the 4 years. When Notre Dame offered him, his offers were much more in line with, I think, Minnesota was one. TCU, I think, was one. Kind of like mid-level Power 5. But yesterday, he picked up an offer from Texas. The kid is from outside Dallas, played high school ball there. But, you know, you read up on him, sort of the community service, you know, GPA. Even though he's somebody Notre Dame was never involved with in recruiting, it does feel like a guy that would fit in at Notre Dame, at least on paper, pretty well.
Definitely. I mean, I think that's a guy that Notre Dame, the building, is feeling pretty optimistic about with the way that tide is turning. I mean, that's a guy they want. That's a guy who they think will fit. I know Trey Webb from San Jose State had also tweeted that he had an offer from Notre Dame. That's not going to happen. I'm not really sure where the lines of communication kind of faltered there, but I just don't think that one's happy. I think a Caleb Evans is a very real possibility. And as you said, last year worked out pretty well for these guys. Now,
yeah.
The guy's only 6'2", 188. He's a corner. Like, he's not going to play safety, and I think they need safety help, maybe more than they need corner help next to Kyle Hamilton. But if you could bring in Evans, who says he has 2 years of eligibility remaining, which I haven't gone through the game-by-game chart. I guess he would have played only four games.
Yes, yeah, so he started games in each of the 4 years, but 2 years ago, he had a season-ending injury within the first three games. So that's where he was able to sort of take a medical redshirt in addition to the COVID year. But if you go through his social media, I mean, he's been tweeting about the NFL draft in 2022. I'm not sure, you know, much like Jack Cohn, I don't think he is looking to make a move for 2 years. I think he's making a move to test himself against a higher level. And I mean, you watch his highlights, There's Texas on there. There's Oklahoma State on there. There's Mississippi State on there. He's played enough Power 5 opponents to have good tape on him. I remember talking to Brian Polian about sort of recruiting perspectives changing during COVID, and I asked if like grad transfers would be more of a priority because you're trying to evaluate high school kids on YouTube workouts or have them send you tape of them doing a three-cone drill that their dad sets up, whereas grad transfers, you're just watching college football games to evaluate them. And he's like, yeah, there is nothing better than game tape for an evaluation. And, you know, look, the Isaiah Pryor grad transfer I don't think has hit the way that Notre Dame thought, but there wasn't a ton of game tape on him. He was a backup at Ohio State. Akello Evans started all 9 games last year for Tulsa. And I think that he has started 24 games in total at Tulsa. I understand that's a Group of 5 program, but, you know, he is around good football and sort of knows what it looks like. So I, especially as a more of a boundary corner with Cam Hart, who has never really played the last 2 years, but they're very high on, to have a second body type like that, because they only really would have those two. I think that would be a significant add.
The other part of that, and this doesn't affect Notre Dame that much, but I learned about this yesterday when talking to someone there. The smaller conferences, the FCS conferences, have basically tape sharing rules where like Notre Dame or Ohio State or whomever's in the market for an up transfer, a guy transferred from the FCS to FBS, has to really work the corners to get their hands on film and get a true evaluation of those kids, which you're probably already a little suspicious about because of who they played against. So I just thought of that right now as you were talking about Brian Polian's philosophy when it comes to this. I mean, if you're Caleb Evans, you're playing in that conference, in that state, and the Power 5 guys you're playing for the most part are Big 12 offenses. You've seen some stuff as a defensive player. Like, I'm not saying, oh, you're going to go against Wisconsin, Cincinnati, it's going to be easy. Not by any stretch of the imagination, but like, it's different. Like, you've got it tested by the best of the best when it comes to offensive football at the highest level of college football. Like, I think that calms a lot of nerves as far as, oh, is this Group of 5 guy ready to come to Power 5? And if he does, if Notre Dame gets him, and I think they will. I mean, look, there are a lot of other – like, he's not a secret anymore. Texas, obviously, is one of the several programs that is in on him right now, and he's from there. So that's always a threat to be respected. But – you've got 3 guys out of 4 starters you feel pretty darn good about in the secondary if he comes. And like, that's pretty good, especially when you have a new defense coordinator.
Yeah, no, I think that would be huge. It's and I agree with you. If they could find a Caleb Evans who played safety, who was 25 pounds bigger, that would be their first priority. But I'm not under the impression that there's anybody out there like that right now. So that if you can add one in the secondary, maybe it's not your first choice, but you know, maybe it allows you to move some people around. That's, you know, they had to move Sean Crawford to safety last year. It's not like they were blessed at corner or safety. So if you can fortify one, then maybe you can move somebody if you have to. I'm certainly not indicating that they would like to move Cam Hart to safety or move Tariq Bracey or Clarence Lewis, but you got to have 6-7 defensive backs that you feel good with, and Caleb Evans would be one of them. How many quarterbacks should you have that you feel good with? If one of them is a top 100 prospect who's a freshman who has been billed as the next big thing, then that would be one that you would want. And this will be, I think, a fascinating storyline throughout fall camp. Whatever we get to see is how Tyler Buckner's reps get divided out. But I think you and I are both of the impression that Notre Dame is going to try to find a way to get him on the field this fall if he continues on the arc that he is on right now.
Yeah, I think your mailbag was littered with questions about Tyler Buckner, which is like, reminds you of 2012 with Gutter Keel, and even 2011 before that with Andrew Hendricks, Everett Gold. So there's always
Phil Dracovic.
Phil Dracovic, Brandon. Well, yeah, I mean, we could go on and on, and that's how you know, like, this kid was a good recruit.
But this time, need it.
I agree with you. I mean, Ian Book just became a 4th round draft pick by a Super Bowl winning coach who's replacing a Hall of Fame quarterback. Now, does that mean he's going to start and go to the Hall of Fame? Probably not, but like he did a lot better than anyone ever had any reason to think he would do. And he did that under Tommy Rees. And I think that's a credit to Tommy Rees and that offensive staff's development. I think Notre Dame comes out of the spring and goes into the summer feeling a lot better about the quarterback room as a whole than it did going into the spring.
I agree.
I mean, you knew Buckner was talented, but you had no idea what to expect when the kid hadn't played football 2 out of the last 3 years. And like he got better. Like we all saw in the spring game how good he looked, but like he got better. He, I was told, ran a 4.6 in their post spring testing times, and that's as a freshman who had a surgically repaired knee 2 years ago. He loves to play football. Everyone knows what a great fit he is academically, what a smart kid he is. Look, Jack Cohn is a redshirt senior with a lot of big game experience. He started the Rose Bowl. He's going to start. There's going to be no question about that. And I, you know, barring injury, knock on wood, he's going to start every game this year, I think. But like, and Drew Pine, for that matter, I don't want to exclude him because he had a good spring as well. And I think he calmed a lot of nerves within the building as far as like, all right, this is a guy who like can go out there and run the offense if disaster strikes and we need to put him out there. But like, thinking long term, Tyler Buckner's the future. If Notre Dame ever slays the dragon that is Alabama or Clemson in a playoff stage, like it's going to be because of a quarterback like him. Probably won't be this year, but I do think you find ways if you're Tommy Rees to get him on the field probably pretty early in the season too. I'm not venturing to guess what those packages will look like, but I think they want to get his feet wet. The sooner the better.
Yeah, and look, if we're measuring Notre Dame against other playoff, not contenders, but like regulars, to win in the playoff, you essentially have to have a first-round pick at quarterback. I think the last non-first-round pick to win a playoff game was Jalen Hurts.
Who's an NFL starter.
Yeah, who was a second
Jacob round Coker pick. Before that.
Second-round pick. Probably. Jake Fromm would have been the guy in between, Coker and Hurts. He was a fifth-round pick, and that was his freshman year at Georgia when he was on like an all-time great defensive team. So that's what it requires to win. And that's not to diminish Ian Book at all, because I think we both agree, like, that guy got so much out of his ability at Notre Dame. And the fact that Sean Payton, I think, validated that development by making him a fourth round pick just backs that up. And at this point, if you don't acknowledge that, then I got nothing for you. I cannot help people that look at Ian Book and be like, they should have went with Dracovic. Like, it just...
Well, and not to diminish Mac Jones, who just became a first-round pick and won a national title, but, like, I'd love to see Ian Book throw into Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and, you know, that group. That would be fun. No, I mean, God bless you, Javon McKinley and Bennis Skoranek, but, like, all those guys were first-round picks. Like, that makes quarterbacks better too.
I think they were top 10 picks. I mean, they were the equivalent of throwing to the offensive line version of McGlinchey and Nelson. I mean, how good did Josh Adams look running behind McGlinchey and Nelson?
There are hats that tell you how good he looks.
Exactly. Very good. So that's what Book was working with. He maxed out what he could do here. And I think that, you know, the Saints backed that up.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
the
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
All episodes available now on Prime Video.
I think that if you're a Notre Dame fan and you're concerned about quarterback development at this point, One, I just think you're sort of missing the boat. But I would also argue that the development of Book should hearten you about maybe less what Jack Cohen's going to get out of 1 year, but really should make you feel good if Reese is here to work with Buckner for the next 3 or 4 years, what Tyler Buckner is going to be become. Because Tyler Buckner comes into Notre Dame with such a higher measurable floor than one Book did. So if you're already a few steps ahead physically and mentally, you've got it all too. I think that Buckner ultimately may prove to be a more sort of savvy quarterback than Book was in terms of processing and install. But if that all is at a higher level now, where that could be in 1, 2, 3 years is got to be exciting if you're Notre Dame.
Absolutely. And look, I get the hesitancy if you're a fan. I mean, like, you're rooting for this program, and when you look at that program, the big picture over the last decade or so, like, I understand the hesitancy. But when you look at the fine print, when you look at who's been coaching what during this time, I mean, Brian Kelly's not running this offense right now. Like, he's the CEO of this program. He's still in charge of it. He's still okay and everything. But, like, they're not running the Brian Kelly offense of speed, 2011, when they were just throwing, and trying to get as many plays as possible. Like, it's different now. It is now.
They had a elite quarterback back then who was just like a dual threat master in 2011. So
they should bring him back.
I understand the change.
They should bring him back. Yeah. Maybe give him a headset and put him in the press box.
All right. A big development in the last couple weeks.
We saw each other.
Yeah, one, we saw each other. Two, you watched Ted Lasso finally. I think you're the last person I know who finally completed it.
I wanted to tweet, like, my sports writer friend should check this out. I don't know if they've ever heard of it. But
did a lot of gaps get filled in for you of, like, references people were making? They're like, oh, yeah, that's what you meant by biscuits with
the boss. I'm not saying my 2-year-old's running around the house singing Jamie Tart doo 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 instead of Baby Shark, but I'm also not saying that. It was fun. It was I love Jason Sudeikis. I loved, like, the character bit when they unveiled it as part of, like, an NBC commercial a few years ago. Like, I no doubt I would enjoy it, but also you know how it's like, we live in these echo chambers of the media where everyone says something's the greatest thing ever and you're just, like, setting yourself up for disappointment.
Yes.
But it was in some ways funnier and sharper than I thought it would be. It wasn't, like, sloppy and just, like, crazy. Like, we got a new TV with Apple TV in it, which is why we finally watched it. I watched it with my wife, who we watch a lot of shows together, as most couples do. But, like, a lot of times one of us falls asleep or the other, and we just restart. And, like, this one, both of us blitz through it together very, very quickly. And both liked it, which is part of its appeal, right? Like, everyone likes it, whether you're a sports fan or not. It was fun. I liked it a lot. Can't wait for the second season. God, not gonna lie, a little surprised with the way things were moving in the middle when he's, like, in the middle of his divorce, and I'm not spoiling anything for anyone because everyone's seen the show but me at this point. I'm surprised he didn't make a move on his boss. I thought that was gonna happen.
Yeah, that never really.
When she sent her friend to his hotel room and he, like, was disappointed, I was like, okay, this is going somewhere.
I hadn't really thought about that, but it's. I am totally with you. It's a show about sports that is kind of, like, independent of sports themselves. Like, I had to talk one of my friends who hates sports, who refers to my job as sports ball writing, that, like, no, you would really like this show. And sure enough, she loved it. So it was such a surprising ray of sunshine in a pretty dark year. I love that I was getting, like, caught up in, like, army figurines and, like, feeling emotional about it. I was like, oh God, the show is, like, it really got its hooks into me. But that's, lovable characters, perhaps not as lovable as the South Bend Seahawks, which I'm sorry to report have fallen to 1-2 and are a bit of a skid right now, in the National Flag Football League of South Bend. But,
I believe you. You're a proud father, though, are you not? Didn't your kid play through?
Tate lost a tooth during a play while playing quarterback. Did not swallow it.
You said flag football.
Flag football. Did not just drop the ball on the ground playing quarterback and run off the field. Just gutted it out and kept on. So props to Tate, who turned 8 this week. And yeah, I think that's maybe a tale that he can regale Ian Book with at the quarterback camp next month about, you know, playing hurt and, you know, toughness and what it means to really be a QB. So perhaps there was a lesson learned even in defeat for Tate Sampson.
So that's class of 2035, if my math's correct. Oh,
yeah, he's a ways out. He's got a lot of work to do. And I will say, if a college women's football program gets started anytime between now and then, our running back, Genesis, is a total terror. I think she has 5 of our 8 touchdowns and has completely made a bunch of first grade boys look like fools when they, I think, don't take her seriously as soon as she gets the ball and just absolutely sprints right by them, to the point by the end of the game, she had 3 defenders on her at all times and we could just like hand the ball off to any other player and they would just run untouched for 20 yards.
Well, I took her seriously the minute you said her name was Genesis, because you don't name your kid that unless they're going to be an absolutely dominant athlete. That'll be on the all-name team in 2035 as well, which I look forward to discussing with you on a future episode of Shamrock. Shout out to Patrick at MEMPRKWY for actually tweeting at both of us last night about Ted Lasso. It was a pretty funny stunt with the actor who played Danny Rojas, who was another favorite character of mine and probably everyone who watched this show, just like the ultimate in positivity. Oh, the other great scene was, I probably can't repeat any of it on here, but when the manager reads the pep talk before whatever game it was when they were on the road and just rips every single player on the team. And they go
Nate.
Out.
Yeah, that was great. And yeah, you probably got my reference to my screenshot of Ted at the board before the Man City match with his list of trick plays. And I tweeted out as like a scene from inside Notre Dame's locker room before the Alabama game. I really wanted them to run Chitty Chitty Bang Bang against the Crimson Tide, but it didn't happen.
That's unfortunate, but there is season 2 and
season 3.
It's
been already renewed for 2 more seasons.
That was like 7 years ago, right? When they came out with those commercials, like there was a long time ago. And I remember when the series came out, I'm just like, you can make a series out of that? Like I love the guy, like I'll watch it, but like, you know, Geico made a caveman series off the camp. I'm like, that's stupid, you know? Like I've been wrong before. I thought if you're a Breaking Bad fan, when they came out with Better Call Saul, I was like, don't root it. And that ends up being almost as good as the original. It's so well done. So I enjoy it. I mean, pretty soon, right? Season 2, I think? July?
Next month? Late July, maybe. We'll be binge watching. Maybe we can do like a podcast of us watching the show. I'm sure everyone would love to listen to that. So
if we get maybe some of our NBC friends on here to come on and talk about it or who may play a role in it, that could help, but...
That could be. I feel like I see some cross promotional opportunities.
I do. Coming maybe Drew Brees will be in the next next season.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe we can bust our guest list out to broaden our horizons a little bit to include Ted Lasso and Ted Lasso acolytes along the way. But we will be back for many podcasts during the summer. Notre Dame State of the Program. We'll definitely do something around that in June. I think that we'll either have, you know, probably Jesse Temple come on to talk a little bit of Wisconsin, maybe at the end of this month, early next month. Antonio Morales, he covers USC for us. I think he would be a good guest to talk about, some of the Trojans' ups and downs, how that fits into the Notre Dame schedule this fall. One of the primetime games of the schedule. So there's plenty of stuff coming in the summer. And then Notre Dame football sort of restarts mid-June with summer school players back on campus. The regular enrollees will be part of the roster too, so that's another story to track. But Matt, I don't know if you have anything else to wrap up on here before we...
No, I think I figured out what you're talking about finally when you said if you're covering a former Shamrock guest on opening weekend. Is he playing ETSU that weekend?
He is playing East Tennessee State
University. I did see him a couple weeks ago, and he said he misses coming on the podcast. That would be everyone's favorite.
I really feel like you and I should not be stopping him from coming back. So
I told him he has an open invite. He was reading your stuff. I'm not kidding, listeners, when I say I saw Clark Lee at a convention in Scottsdale, and he broke down Pete's spring game write-up to me and was singing Pete's praises to me. This is the Vanderbilt head coach reading spring game content on Notre Dame written by none other than Pete Sampson.
Well, that's
why we love him.
No better way to end the podcast than that. So until we return, probably in the next couple weeks. But yeah, I think we'll do some state of the program stuff moving forward, have some guests this summer. Should be a fun and interesting summer preceding a fun and interesting season. So until our next podcast, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for always being with us on The Shamrock.